Fan on Demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. An absolutely insane week for us at Sportsnet, obviously with the launch of the Ultimate Fighter Nations. A little later on in the show, we will hear from the winner from Episode 1, Ragin' Cajun Johnson, for his victory on the show last night. He's very excited. We'll get him on a little later on the show. We'll also hear from Randa Marcos Thomas, who is a top-ranked strawweight in the female division in Canada. She has taken on Justine Kish, and the winner, apparently, in this one will get to the Ultimate Fighter House for the strawweight division when the all-ladies edition of the Ultimate Fighter goes down. Randa Marcos Thomas is a fellow Canadian. She's based out of Ontario. Big fight for her next weekend. We will talk to her a little bit later on as she gets ready to take on Justine Kish. And, of course, we're going to hear from George St. Pierre. We're going to hear from Dana White, and we'll hear from Kevin Ioli for his thoughts on the current dilemma and the current situation, which is George St. Pierre versus the UFC versus Dana White, and get his thoughts on what is turning out to be something that can be easily fixed, and we'll get to that momentarily. But first things first, last night, of course, out of Duluth, Georgia, Luke Rockhold, an absolutely stellar performance in the main event versus Costa Philippou, continuing his his ascension. Well, not really ascension up the middleweight rankings. At least he kept his spot in my rankings. A fantastic fight versus Costa Philippou, ending with those leg kicks to the liver. And, you know, as you saw, there's a little delayed reaction when Costa felt that liver shot. And then, you know, Costa's a tough guy, but you really can't do, once that liver shot connects, the body, there's nothing you can do. You can't be tough. It's not like you're taking a punch to the chin or to whatever, an elbow. Liver shots, it's done. Feel bad for Costa. Hopefully he's doing pretty good right now. Great card overall in Georgia, in my opinion. TJ Dillashaw stood out for me. My goodness, is he looking fantastic right now. And of course, Cole Miller with his victory over Sam Cecilia, calling out Donald Cerrone. That's going to make headlines real soon. And of course, you got Luke Rockhold in the post-fight press conference talking more about taking on, or wanting to take on, Michael Bisping. But the current big fight in mixed martial arts right now is George St. Pierre and his recent comments. If you missed them, I'll play them momentarily, but they've been misconstrued by Dana White. I don't know if Dana White heard the comments or was reading headlines, but they've been misconstrued. I'll play George St. Pierre's comments, so you get your thoughts on that, or get your you know, you can hear it yourself what George St. Pierre said. Then we'll go to Dana White's comments. I put together a little montage, and of course we'll get the thoughts from Kevin Ioli shortly thereafter. All right, here's George St. Pierre recently with his thoughts on the whole issue of why he left in terms of drug testing, and how he's not happy with how things went down with the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
I say that I try to change things, and unfortunately, people, maybe for money reason, for other reason, for image, maybe they were not ready to do that, or maybe the fear that other people after that, it will become like a thing that everybody is going to want to be tested, because a lot of people, they might be on drugs, or the honest people, they will want to have a fair fight. But what I say is I try to do change in a very diplomatic way, and it didn't work. So unfortunately, it's unfortunate, but I believe it will happen in, sooner or later, because that's the next step. In baseball, in soccer, it happened. But it will happen in MMA. It's not more different. The only thing is MMA is only the UFC that has a big power. So the fighter and the reporter and everybody cannot say what they want, because they are afraid. You know, because one, they have the big power, but they... which will happen eventually or in the near future, I guarantee you.
So there's George St. Pierre with his thoughts on the whole situation with you know, drug testing and how he wanted to make a change. And now, in my opinion, what George said may have been lost in translation, and some sites are saying that he called the UFC a monopoly. I think what he really said is they've got the biggest power. They've got the most influence. I don't think he insinuated at all that the UFC has a monopoly. Unfortunately, that's how Dana White interpreted it and some of the other stuff that George St. Pierre said. Now, at the post-fight press conference in Atlanta, Dana White was asked the question, you know, do you want to comment on what George St. Pierre said? Of course he's going to comment. I can't play the full clip, but I put together a little montage of everything that Dana White said regarding George St. Pierre, and here it is right here.
First of all, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but George St. Pierre is the one that said he wanted to do the extra drug testing because he wanted to prove that he wasn't on drugs. It wasn't that he thought that Johnny Hendricks was on steroids or performance-enhancing drugs of any kind. He wanted to do this. And just like you see in boxing, you know, when I said that I thought it was ridiculous for this, these guys to be doing, first of all, you see it in boxing all the time. One guy comes out and says, I want to do extra drug testing because I'm worried about this guy. I want to see what's going on. They never come to an agreement. Also, for him to say that we don't, you know, we're very lenient on drug testing. When we go out of the country and we regulate ourselves, we test everybody on the card, not just the main event, not just the co-main event. What I heard is, and you know, George St. Pierre is upset about some of the things that I said at the press conference. And he's upset that I said that he didn't win the fight, that I thought Johnny Hendricks won the fight. But if that's the case, call me man to man. Let's talk on the phone. Let's sit down face to face. I talked to him after the fight face to face. He didn't say any of that to me. So the whole thing is a little weird. And then as far as, you know, the other thing he said, that we're a monopoly, Viacom is our competitor. They have a $40 billion market cap. $40 billion. Okay, I'm never going to see $40 billion as long as I live. Neither will the UFC. So we're not a monopoly either. The whole, everything that George St. Pierre said is a little kooky. You know, I'm here. I've been in Atlanta. I've been on planes and doing all this stuff. Lorenzo reached out to him. Lorenzo still hasn't heard from him yet. So, you know, if George St. Pierre wants to talk like a man, he can pick up the phone and call us or come see us face to face. But everything that he said is ridiculous. George St. Pierre has been accused his whole career. That's why he wanted to do the drug testing. BJ Penn, when he fought BJ Penn, BJ was accusing him of being on performance-enhancing drugs. So the reason he wanted to do this drug testing was to prove to the world that he's not. He's been with the UFC for 10 years. He's defended his title 9 times. Have you ever seen him try to do any extra drug testing or, you know, say, hey, I want to do extra, I want to do this, I want to do that? Never. And this time was supposed to be to prove that he wasn't doing it. And for the record, George St. Pierre has never tested positive for anything in his whole career. And he's been tested because most of his fights in the UFC were title fights. So he was always tested. So the whole thing is real weird.
So there you have it, UFC President Dana White. And again, just like at UFC 167 at the post-fight press conference, if he and George would actually talk face-to-face and just or over the phone, none of this would be going down, in my opinion. I think there's a situation here, once again, where there's something lost in translation, and Dana's giving his thoughts, George is giving his thoughts. If they would just get together in a room and discuss things, guarantee you none of this would be making, well, it'd be making headlines, but it wouldn't be as bad as it seems right now. But this is just one story right now in the world of mixed martial arts. The same thing, you know, a lot of stuff is happening. And what we'll do is we'll bring on Kevin Ioli from Yahoo Sports to get his thoughts as well, because there's so many things that are going down that we need to address right now. Kevin, first things first, I mean, lots of talk about George St. Pierre and his comments, and of course, Dana White's rebuttal and Lorenzo Fertitta's thoughts originally. What do you make of this whole situation, starting off with George St. Pierre?
Well, you know, number one, I guess the number one thing about George St. Pierre is that I'm disappointed. I think anybody who knows me, has read any of my work, knows that I am as virulently anti-PED as there is. And I think I have been very loud that it needs to be eradicated from fight sports. And I think it is a huge problem in both boxing and MMA. It needs to be taken care of. And George was in a very unique position because he was one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful fighters in the UFC. And if he had spoken out during the peak of his career, he could have affected change. And now, you know, it looks like solid graves, and there's a lot going on there. And it depends on who you believe. But it's just disappointing, Joe, to me, that George didn't use the opportunity when he was the champion, when he was the biggest thing in the sport, to bring this to the attention of people. It's not like he didn't have chances, and he intentionally did not.
Well, what about the situation with Johnny Hendricks, where George specifically said he wanted to use VADA to kick things off? Johnny agreed, and then you know, the conference call with the UFC that changed everything. To my understanding, George was sort of, you know, taken aback by that and heartbroken that the UFC didn't back up VADA and instead went with WADA, and it turned into that whole mess. Was that a way of George saying, you know what,
well,
this is what,
know,
I want to do?
You know, I think George has the right intentions, number one. Let me state that. I'm not being critical of George here. I think George's intentions were good, and I think what he wanted to do. this whole thing with WADA needs to be worked out on a different level, because WADA is this independent, it's not regulated, there's no, you know, there's some issues with WADA that I think still have to be, you know, taken care of. So my take on it is this. The Nevada Athletic Commission, they worked out a plan in boxing for a Juan Manuel Marquez, Timothy Bradley fight, where they had this enhanced testing, exactly what GSP was looking to do with Johnny Hendricks, and it worked flawlessly. Then it worked flawlessly in the Barnett-Travis Brown fight at UFC 168. And all, what happened was they did the testing at a lab in Salt Lake City, or from a lab in Salt Lake City that was accredited by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. Then that worked with the commission, and they worked to the athletic commission. So there's regulatory rules. The Nevada Athletic Commission has jurisdiction, whereas WADA does not. And, Joe, here's why that is important. Eric Morales tested positive for clenbuterol prior to a boxing match last year, yep, or 2 years ago, excuse me, with Danny Garcia. It was done by the WADA. And then nothing happened. He was allowed to fight. He did not get stopped. They didn't take him out of the fight because there was no jurisdiction. So that is the issue. So I think that while WADA is a good concept, it's still in its infancy, and it needs, some of these regulatory issues need to be worked out. But there were no regulatory issues with the Nevada Athletic Commission in the WADA lab. And I think that that should have been worked out from Georgia's standpoint.
Now, to my understanding, the lab that WADA uses is not the same one that WADA uses?
They can use different labs. WADA does use WADA-accredited labs. So this is kind of funny. We're talking WADA, WADA. WADA is the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. They are the new one. They're headed by Dr. Margaret Goodman, who was a former ringside physician and the head of the Medical Advisory Board of the Nevada Athletic Commission. WADA is the World Anti-Doping Agency, which is the organization based in Canada that is known for running the Olympic testing program and is the standard in the industry. So WADA accredits labs around the world and says, you meet our standards for drug testing criteria, and then we will accept your results if an athlete is tested at that lab. So Salt Lake City is one of those labs. There's only a couple in the United States, one at UCLA in Los Angeles, one in Salt Lake City. I'm not sure exactly. I think there's four, but there's not a lot in the United States. So as a result, a lot of the people have been using the Salt Lake lab. WADA has used them. WADA has also used the UCLA lab. So either one is accredited by the World Anti-Doping Agency.
Now, to my understanding, Georgia's decision to use WADA and also use WADA afterwards, he agreed to that, but the reasoning he chose WADA initially when he did his research was simply because of the carbon isotope testing, which tests for synthetic testosterone. Does the commissions, for example, Nevada, do they use carbon isotope testing to test for synthetic testosterone as opposed to simply an epitestosterone to testosterone level?
Yes. Number one, credit for George for doing that. That is good. But number two, yes, they will do that when they can pay for it. Now, that's been a big issue. Prior to the start of this enhanced testing, and it really came up in boxing as a result of Floyd Mayweather, Joe. He started this a couple of years ago. He used USADA, but this is where this all generated from. The commission did not do carbon isotope ratio testing because it was too expensive and it didn't have the budget. And I actually spoke to the commission chairman, Francisco Aguilar, last night on this topic at great length and discussed it. And they want to go with this enhanced testing going forward, so they, in fact, do that. That was a part of this thing. Since the UFC was going to pay for it, and Chairman Aguilar told me in no uncertain terms, anytime they ever asked the UFC to pay for testing, the UFC said unequivocally, we'll do it. Whatever you want, we'll do. As much as you want, we will do. Whenever you guys want it, we'll pay for it. So the UFC made no qualms. I was suspicious about that at first, frankly, whether they had in fact done that and whether they were as committed as they were saying they were. But Chairman Aguilar confirmed that they were, and they would have done any kind of testing. All the testing that's done in the Olympics would have been done as part of this, as they're referring to it, Joe, enhanced testing with the Salt Lake Lab and the Nevada Athletic Commission.
And so I guess, I mean, that's a big step. That is huge. If they start using, you know, carbon isotope ratio testing, that is absolutely huge in my opinion. The other thing is, you know, random testing. That's a key to me. I mean, your thoughts on that, because telling someone that we're going to test you on, you know, April 16th, well, that's more of an IQ test. That's not a drug test, in my opinion. If you start randomly testing guys, well, guess what? You're going to catch guys.
I have fought with Dana White over this for a while where, you know, I've argued with him, and I said, Dana, testing after a fight is really worthless. Number one, you know, just the obvious, you know, if we catch the person after the fight, we want to prevent a person who is juiced up from getting into the cage to fight. We don't want that to happen because of what the consequences could be. But number two, when they know they're being tested, they just cycle off it. And they know how long, as Lance Armstrong proved. And if anybody, Joe, if anybody really wants to know a little bit about how these guys do it, I suggest searching on the internet for the United States Anti-Doping Association's reasoned decision on Lance Armstrong. And there's 10 pages in there where it details in great detail how Lance Armstrong beat that testing when he was tested all the time, sometimes every day, and he managed to beat the testing. That is in USADA's reasoned decision, and you can read that. I think it's actually from pages 129 to 139.
Yeah, you sent me that information. Being, I read that. That was fantastic stuff right there.
Yeah. And that information proved that the post-fight testing is ridiculous because they cycle off and they don't have it. So you're 100% right. They need to have random testing when the fighters don't know about it. But that's what this thing was going to do because, yeah, even though they know once they sign for the enhanced testing, they know they're going to be tested certain times. They don't know when those times are going to be. And it's going to prevent them, by and large, from using it. Now, people who cheat, and this goes not just for fighting, but for all sports, and there's cheaters in every single sport: baseball, football, hockey. They all cheat. Track and field, they do it because the stakes are so high. They always seem to be a step or two ahead of the testers, and it's always a game of cat and mouse where you're trying to catch up to them. But I think you have to make the best effort you can make, especially in the fight sports, because of how dangerous it is. And in that particular situation, random testing is the only way to go. Random unannounced drug testing. So if they signed that thing, if George would have signed and Johnny would have signed, now George did go through testing, and good for him, he passed everything. He didn't know when he was going to be tested. In fact, on the week of the fight, I was in George's suite on the week of 167 on a Monday, and our interview was set at 5 o'clock, and I was there at a little before 5. And George got escorted out because the drug test people came in, and he had to give a sample right then and there. So, you know, good for him for passing those tests, but that's what needs to be done. The whole panel of testing, including human growth hormone and insulin and carbon isotope ratio testing, and then secondarily, it has to be unannounced, so they don't know when it's coming and they can't prepare for it. And the only way then they know they can pass the test is if they just don't take it, because that's the only way they can guarantee it's not in their system.
We're in conversation right now with Kevin Ioli. You can follow Kevin online at Kevin I on Twitter. He's a boxing and MMA columnist for Yahoo Sports. You can follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Now, you take a look at what George said, Dana's rebuttal, Lorenzo's thoughts. When you start looking at where this is foreshadowing, where this trajectory of this relationship is heading, I don't see it heading anywhere very well or anywhere good. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's not good, and it's disappointing. And, you know, you know, Dana is not the type of person who's going to sit back quietly and listen to somebody like George make, you know, anybody, not just George, anybody, you know, make comments. And, you know, it's too bad that it got to this point. You know, Lorenzo came out with some reasoned comments, and, you know, Dana was, you know, was emotional and said what he said. You know, my thing is this: it's not going to be good, but that doesn't mean that they can't work together in the future. You know, I don't think that we're ever going to see George and Dana as best buddies from this point forward. But, you know, that doesn't mean if George decides he has the urge to fight that he won't come back and fight in the UFC, because, you know, George, I think, wants to fight the best competition. And, you know, there's very few athletes like George who are as motivated and as competitive as he is, and give him all props for being willing to take on all comers and defend his belt all the time against the absolute best contender at that given point. So I think while it's unfortunate, and I think the relationship is going to be probably strained forever, I don't think that it's going, you know, to end. And look, Rampage Jackson, Tito Ortiz, Randy Couture, they all went through these battles with Dana, and they still ended up fighting during and after their battle. So I don't think it'll be any different with George St. Pierre.
Yeah, and I concur with that. Now, you're based in Nevada. Obviously, some interesting news that come out of Nevada recently with Keith Kaiser resigning from his position or walking away from his position. On Friday, the commission will start looking at, potentially finding a replacement for an executive director in that position. What do you make of this whole scenario, and what do you see foreshadowing in the future?
Well, there's no question. I mean, Keith said that, he resigned of his own volition. Unquestionably, he was forced out. There, powerful forces, were complaining both on boxing and MMA side, and, he was forced to resign. So, let's, be honest there, number one. So that's why he's out. But I think that, Keith did a lot of good things, but he did a lot of things that I disagree with. Keith did a lot of enhanced drug testing on his own, and he really amped it up and took pride in doing that. So I think he deserves credit from that standpoint. The biggest issue that I had with Keith was his handling of referees and judges. Number one, and I wrote this in my column on Yahoo Sports a couple of days ago, Joe, was, the fact that John McCarthy was not refereeing and wasn't licensed to referee in Nevada because of Keith. John, when he was a member of the media, made a comment about Keith Kaiser that he probably shouldn't have made, but he made it. Keith took it personally, and when John applied for a license in Nevada, he would not grant him a license and hasn't subsequently done that. And I think that, you have to take yourself out of the mix as the executive director and say, I want what's best for the fighter and what's best for the sport. And John McCarthy, if he's not the best referee in the world, he's certainly in the top five, in my opinion, in the top two. So you have to have him. And they kept putting Steve Mazzagatti and Kim Winslow out there. And John McCarthy is miles better than both of them. And it was unfortunate that Keith did that he put himself above the sport. And I think that was one of the things that really, as time went on, led to his ouster.
Any word on who may be a replacement for Keith?
Not yet. They're going through the process. As I mentioned earlier, Joe, I talked to Commissioner Aguilar last night, and they're swamped with applications. It's not going to be an easy job to fill. It's going to be very difficult because you have to get a person who knows both boxing and MMA. You would prefer to have somebody who has some kind of officiating background to understand that. They're going to need to have a little bit of a legal background. They're going to have to be well-versed in drugs and the drug testing situation. They're going to have to be willing, sometimes with promoters, and probably doesn't happen as much with UFC, but it happens with boxing, where the executive director has to approve the fights. And sometimes, a promoter will try to sneak a mismatch in there, and you have to turn that down. So you have to be willing to go to battle with these big personalities like Bob Arum and Dana White. And so it is a very difficult job for not a lot of money. They're going to pay $97,000 for the job. And while that's a good amount of money for most people, it's not a lot of money for the type of person that it would require to get for that. Those kind of people are making a lot more money than $97,000 that would meet that criteria. So I think they're really going to be in a lot of difficulty getting the person that they want.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are mainly lawyers, and they can probably make double that, triple that, just on an annual salary, so I concur with that. Three quick things for you before we let you go. We'll start off with the rumors of Brock Lesnar returning. You think it'll happen?
No.
Okay, Luke Rockhold yesterday, a fantastic performance versus Costa Philippou. What do you make of Luke's performance, and who do you see him potentially taking on next?
I really like his performance. I think Luke Rockhold is a very good fighter and a guy that is going to win a lot of fights in the middleweight division. He called out Michael Bisping. I'd like to see that fight. I think that would be a very fun fight, Michael Bisping against Luke Rockhold. They have a beef. They're both in the top five, top six of the middleweight division. Let's do it.
The irony of Anderson Silva's nickname being the Spider, because there are so many different angles and storylines with Anderson at the moment. You take a look at what the Spider has to go through in terms of rehab. He does want to come back. He's saying his losses to both losses to Chris Weidman were not really losses. He wants to come back. There's talk of, who will he face next? Does he get a title shot right away? What do you make of this whole Anderson Silva as we close off this conversation with Kevin Ioli?
Well, you know, I wrote a column about this the other day. You know, hey, if Anderson wants to come back, great. I think it's great. And I won't count him up because, you know, those elite athletes, you know, those good athletes, but then you have to go one other level up. And those elite athletes are the kind of guys that can do this and they can come back. And so I wouldn't count Anderson from coming back. I would count Anderson out. Number one, I should say he doesn't deserve an immediate title shot. He lost two title fights in a row, and you can say fluke or not fluke, but he was getting beaten. I don't think there's any question that Anderson Silva is going to have to win his way back to a title shot. And, you know, whether he wants to do that or not, I don't know. But he certainly, I don't think, deserves a title shot. You know, he didn't show that he was remotely competitive with Chris Weidman in those two fights. So I think that he needs to win. But if I think he can come back and still be a player in that division or a 205 if he chooses to fight there.
And before I let you go, Kevin, let's be honest for a second. Sidney Crosby, we're captaining Team Canada. Your boy, Sidney Crosby from your Pittsburgh Penguins, is someone I can now root for and you're going to have to root against. How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, you know, I want to tell you this because this is a story that will tell my love of hockey. My wife and I were sitting watching the gold medal game from Vancouver in 2010. And, of course, you know, I root for Canada in every sport and every circumstance except when they're against the U.S. So if the U.S. loses right away, I will definitely be rooting for Team Canada. But in Vancouver, I was rooting for Team USA. And I was rooting very hard for Team USA. So Crosby scored the goal, and I just pounded the table. I was upset that the USA lost. And my wife looked at me and she said, well, at least it was your guy Crosby who scored the winning goal. And I said, I don't care. I can't stand Crosby. And anybody who knows me knows that that was one of the rare times in my life I would ever speak those words. So, Sydney, you're an enemy for a couple of weeks, but I still love you.
Oh, I can't wait for these Olympics to get underway. Kevin, thank you very much for time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Randa Marcos-Thomas, Canada's top-ranked strawweight in women's MMA. She's got a big fight coming up versus Justine Kish next weekend, and the winner of this fight apparently will get on the UFC's strawweight Ultimate Fighter coming up later this year on All Women's Ultimate Fighter. And we'll also hear from Ragin' Cajun Johnson from Team Canada, who was victorious last night in the season debut, in the inaugural debut of the Ultimate Fighter Nations. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Shodan Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And as you saw on Sportsnet 360 last night, the debut of the inaugural season of the Ultimate Fighter Nations, Canada versus Australia. A great episode, in my opinion, and it's only the first of many to come with a lot of excitement and a lot of drama. And one of those guys that put that drama all together, of course, is Ragin' Cajun Johnson. He's one of those characters that have been around the mixed martial arts scene in Canada for a very long time, and he joins us right now. Cajun, first things first, congratulations on the victory in the very first fight of the Ultimate Fighter Nations.
Thanks a lot, bro. It was fun.
Now, let's walk. There's a whole bunch of things that we can talk about, but first things first, let's go through the selection process. The day that you had to try out here in Toronto, what was going through your mind? Because from what I understand, I've known you for a long time, there were a bit of nerves there, but there was a job that needed to be done.
Yeah, I was nervous, but it's good. You know, nerves make you sharp. They keep you focused, and I knew what I had to do. I accepted the nerves, and I did my job.
Walk me through the selection process, because obviously step one is the grappling process, step two is the striking, but then there's the interview, and that's the one part I think that I believe that you must have shined through the most.
Yeah, I was nervous for the grappling just because I don't have any control over who they're picking for me and stuff, but the striking was chills, and the interview, I was like, that's chills for me, that's easy work, you know what I'm saying?
How was the interview, by the way?
It was really good. The first one that I did was pretty chills. It was not as good as the second one, though. The second one was interviewed by a guy named Don Young. He's like the head producer, I believe, and he's amazing. So it was just like a conversation more than an interview.
So you leave that whole conversation, you walk away thinking, okay, did I make it? Did I not make it? There's that whole period of time before you get the, before you get contacted. Walk me through that experience until the day that you got, notified that, hey, you know what, you made the show.
Yeah, like after the interview and all and everything, I really thought I was in. I thought I was a shoe-in. I thought they would have to be kind of nuts thought to take me. Just because of, like, everything I've done, the amount of followers I have, et cetera, et cetera. But the more time that passed, I got less and less sure of me being in a shoe-in and me actually getting into this thing. And right before they called me, actually, I heard they had called a couple people, and I had talked to those people, and those people had told me that, yeah, they had already picked all the people that got in, and they were just kind of calling the guys that didn't get in now. And I was like, oh, that must mean I didn't get in. Like, oh, what am I going to do with myself? How am I ever going to get into the UFC now? What am I going to do? I'm going to go jump off a bridge. And pretty much right after because I was in a massage, and I was talking to my massage therapist, I'm like, oh, right after I said, like, okay, I'm going to end up going and stepping off a bridge now. Like, this is stupid. I'm over this. And then they called me. Like, Don called me, and he's like, yeah, we have good news for you. I'm like, yeah, thank God. I started freaking out, jumping around the studio and everything. It was wicked.
Awesome. We're in conversation right now with Ragin' Cajun Johnson. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter at I am Ragin, R-A-J-I-N at the end there, and follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. So you get the call, you made the team, and then the whole process of putting the team together. What did you think of your teammates when you looked around and realized, hey, man, these are seven bad dudes from across Canada?
Well, first of all, it's R-A-G-I-N, I am Ragin. Don't ever spell with a J. I don't understand how people mess that up. But my teammates were awesome.
You know,
man.
What? I know exactly what you're thinking right now, because the same thing I said on live television last night, the little slip-up, the little random noises that came out of my mouth, I am not having a good day with Ragin. This is insane.
It's all good. It's all good. But yeah, my teammates were wicked, man. Like, I had known a lot of them previously, pretty much everybody except for Elias and Matt Durosh. I didn't have actual knowledge of them, but everybody else I had known for quite some time, and I was really cool with, and we had a really good chemistry. Like, we were really, really, like, we were actually a team. Like, because a lot of these shows, you see, like, it's just a bunch of individuals that are kind of put onto a team, and there's a lot of crossover and stuff like that. Some guys are going with the other team, but Team Canada, like, we were solid, bro. We were, like, a solid unit.
So walk me through when you find out that's a big log house in the middle of nowhere, you know, a warehouse in the middle of nowhere. Like, the producers, Don and them, were super smart in putting this all together, especially that big moose head in the room. Walk me through that experience of A, seeing the gym, B, getting into that house.
Well, seeing the gym was cool. Like, it was pretty much identical to every other Ultimate Fighter gym that I had seen, right? So I was like, yeah, okay, I'm actually here. This is pretty epic. But when they brought us to the house, I was so excited because, like, I grew up in the middle of nowhere in a log house, you know what I mean? And now I'm in the middle of nowhere in a log house. So it was really, really a cool experience. I felt very at home there. It was perfect for me. I really don't like city life, and I live in the middle of this hood surrounded by red brick and garbage. So I was so excited to be out in fresh air and able to see the stars. And yeah, it was really amazing.
What are your thoughts, though, on some of the Team Canada guys that were so proud of you? And you know, you can even see their stuff right now via Twitter. But even on the show, they're like, no one deserves it more than Cajun. No one does. This guy's been around forever. I mean, that's got to make you feel great, dude.
It makes me feel amazing, man. It really does. Like, it's so great to actually get acknowledgement for all of my hard work. Like, I have been working for a long time. Like, a lot of these guys are, like, 4 years into their career. Like, I'm 12, man. I'm 12 years in. I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career. I've missed a couple shots, and I'm really, really excited to finally be there, man. I really am.
Do you sit back and think to yourself and look back to the old days? Like, I mean, I think it was you, myself, Bill Mahood, back in Vernon in like 2002, and you think back to all the old guys that have been around there from day one and what they're probably thinking about you?
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of messages and calls from them, actually. A lot of they're all so stoked that I'm still with it and that I'm still doing what I need to do, you know? And it's like a win for all of us, you know, because like we all came up together and life got in the way for a lot of people, but I just stuck it out and me winning makes them feel like they're winning too. So it's like kind of a win for PG Fight Club, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to get to. But the big decision you made, or one of the biggest decisions you made in your career, was to say, you know what, I need to relocate. You went all the way out to Montreal at TriStar. What was the final thing that said that broke the camel's, the straw that broke the camel's back and says, you know what, this is what I need to do to eventually get to be where I need to be at?
Well, it was two things. It was the sparring partners that I I encountered when I got here, and it was the intensity of the detail that Faraz goes into when he's showing technique and how much he actually cares about his athletes. I was considering going to Extreme Couture before that, but it was more of a gym. Like, I got the feel of it was more of a gym that, like, it was just a whole bunch of guys that would go and smash each other in a room, and there was no real, like, general watching over everything. Whereas here, it's the complete opposite. It's very, very controlled, and Faraz takes a great interest with all his athletes. So that was really the clinch here with Faraz.
The one thing I really enjoyed about the episode, it's just me because, you know, being around you and being around the guys for such a long time is the nerves that you were showing on the show. You've been around the game for such a long time, like over 30 fights. Even George St. Pierre gets nervous before fights, and people don't understand that. They think that, well, you've done it so many times, you shouldn't be nervous. Walk me through that and how, you know, the Raging Johnson from about, you know, 10 years ago could not have dealt with what you were dealing with in that house before that first fight.
Yeah, it's very true. A lot of people will even tell you that they don't feel nervous, but they're either lying or they're psychotic, because there's so much on the line every single time you fight. Pretty much every fight is your biggest fight, or the biggest fight of your life, because all that matters is your last fight. And I've learned so many lessons over the years, and one of those lessons is to just be honest with myself and the people around me. Like, if I'm feeling nervous, I'm not going to pretend that I'm not feeling nervous. I'm going to be like, yeah, I'm super nervous, and I'm going to be honest with that, and I'm going to own that, I'm going to acknowledge it, and I'm going to accept it. And me accepting that allows me to deal with it and to move forward and to perform properly. If I was to be like, I'm not nervous, I don't feel this, then it's just going to build and build and build and make it into something that's so much bigger that it's going to hamper my performance when I try to get into the cage and scrap.
And speaking of scrap, you did a fantastic job. But next week, you got Elias there, basically representing Team Canada in a really tough scrap against Zane, in my opinion. I think if that thing goes, I mean, I can't wait to see it go down, to be honest with you. But at the same time, I was with Elias yesterday, and he said you were glowing after your victory. But then it had to get down to the fact that Elias had to get ready as well for his fight. What can we, A, how are you feeling after your victory? And B, what can we look forward to when Elias steps into the octagon for the first time under the UFC banner?
Oh, the victory was amazing. Obviously, I felt like I was on cloud nine, but it was different because as soon as you win, it's like, okay, and Elias is fighting. And now all the cameras, everything shifts to Elias. Everybody's attention kind of shifts to Elias. And it's like, what happened here? Like, I won over here. You know, like, it's different. You know, there's no like friends and family. There's no big after party. It's like, okay, I won. Now let's back to work. It's very, very different than a normal situation. But, yeah, Elias, it's going to be a barn burner. You're not going to want to miss this one. He's a wicked scrapper. He was super awkward to spar with, this guy. Like, very, very annoying to spar Elias. Like, I love him. He's an amazing guy. To spar him, he's so annoying. It's like, that shouldn't work. That shouldn't work. That shouldn't work, but it's still working and it's still landing, and it pissed me right off, to tell you the truth.
Well, the one thing him and I were discussing last night is, you know, my worst fear is to be in the same room with both you guys, because I don't know who's crazier, you or him. So you tell me, who's zanier, you or the Spartan?
He's crazier, for sure. But I really don't know. It just depends on what type of crazy you're talking about. I think he's funnier. He's more like comedic. I'm more just like high energy and artistic, I guess.
That's awesome. You know what? I'm not going to disagree with you, but there's a feature for UFC Center right there. The three of us hitting the town one day, whether it's Montreal or you coming down to Toronto or us, you know, Dana White's worst nightmare, us three in Las Vegas. We'll figure something out, but first things first, though, thank you very
much. Sounds good.
Yeah, man, thank you very much. Give the boys at TriStar my best, and look forward to having you back on the show after your next fight.
Thank you. Will do.
There you have it, Raging Cajun Johnson. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at I am Raging, not a J, a G. And I'm sure that, I mean, that's the second thing I screwed up with Raging, or the, not even 12 hours, maybe 24 hours if that, but 12 hours, and I'm sure he's going to make me pay, but thus is the life that I live. Now, continuing the conversation with the Ultimate Fighter later on this year, The UFC will crown their first ever strawweight champion in the women's division, and they're going to do it via the Ultimate Fighter Tournament format. 11 strawweights have already been selected. Carla Esparza, Claudia Gadella, Felice Herrig, Joanne Calderwood, Tisha Torres, Rose Namajunas, Beck Hyatt, Emily Kagan, Alex Chambers, Juliana Lima, and Paige VanZant. That's 11 ladies. 5 more spots are available. And in one of those spots, we are all hoping in Canada that Randa Marcos Thomas will get that spot. She is the top-ranked strawweight in this country, but she has a big fight coming up next Friday against Justine Kish, who, by the way, people are saying could beat anyone in that house. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that, but yes, Justine is super tough. She trains at a black house, and she'll be competing against Randa next Friday on RFA. Now, I had a chance to speak with Randa about this fight and potentially getting onto the Ultimate Fighter, and here's my conversation with Randa right now. All right, Randa, first things first, you got a big fight coming up next weekend. We'll get to that actually momentarily. I want to get people to understand where you're coming from. You're training out of Windsor. You're the country's top-ranked strawweight. That's a lot of pressure going on for a young lady of your age heading into a big fight versus Justine Kish at RFA next weekend. How are you feeling as you're getting closer to the bout?
I'm feeling nervous. I'm feeling, a little stressed out, training every single day, sometimes twice a day. Everyone's helping me out. Everyone's on my back, everyone's backing me up, training me, coming in with me. I'm getting ready. So hopefully when the time comes, I'll be ready for this.
Now, you're undefeated at 3-0. So is Justine. The irony is you both have 2 wins via submission, and your last fight is both by decision, which is sort of crazy. It's kind of funny how this is all coming together. But there's a lot of pressure on this fight for both you ladies because there's rumors that the winner of this fight could get a slot as part of one of the strawweights on the upcoming Ultimate Fighter season with featuring all the ladies. Is that what you're hearing as well?
Yeah, I'm hearing all of those things, about Invicta, about the UFC and everything. But honestly, I'm not worried about anything right now. I'm just worried about this fight. I'm not focused on anything. Whatever happens after this fight, I'll worry about it then. So right now, just focusing on it.
I'll tell you this thing. I had a conversation with a bunch of people that are around you, from Alex Caparici and Robin Black from Premium Management or Premium MMA Management to Sam Stowe to Chad LaPrice, and they all speak very highly of you. So let me get one thing straight, though. You're based out of Windsor with the Maximum Training Center, but you also do some training as well at Adrenaline in London?
Yeah, we work with them as well. Just last weekend, I was over there training, and Kara Kirsch came in and helped me out. Everybody was there. It was a really good workout.
How long are your training camps generally?
I'm not sure. Right now, this one was a little short notice. I had a little over a month, maybe 2 months to train for this, but I haven't stopped since my last fight. I'm always in the gym. I'm always working out. So really, it just got really hard. The last 2 months, been working really hard on it.
What got you into mixed martial arts?
I actually wrestled for about 5 years in high school, and couldn't move on in Windsor with my wrestling background, and I had to leave Windsor in order to get into anything, but I didn't want to. So, and then I found out jiu-jitsu is kind of similar to wrestling, and I picked up on jiu-jitsu right away and then slowly got into the stand-up, and now I love the cage fighting.
Now, it's always, I always get a big smile on my face whenever I hear a lady say she loves cage fighting. What do you say to those detractors, though? Because I got to deal with them all the time, whether it's on the radio show, the TV side, or in person, that don't like women's fighting. And I try to explain to them, dude, have you ever watched a women's fight? I mean, it's unbelievable. What do you say to those detractors?
You have to be in the cage to really know what it's like. I mean, everybody has their own opinion on it. But for me, I was a little scared at first, getting hit in the face and everything. But when you get in there, it's not about getting hurt. It's about being technical. So it's an amazing feeling to be get in that cage and to fight and to walk out of that cage and know you can fight just as good as any guy. It's just an amazing feeling. You have to be there, I guess, to be in that cage to realize what it's really like.
We're in conversation right now with Randa Marcos Thomas. You can follow her online at Randa MMA, RANDA MMA. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. All right, Randa, let's talk about Justine for a moment here. Justine Kish trains at a black house, competing at RFA 12 next Friday, excuse me. What do you know about your opponent, and what are you expecting when you step into the cage with her?
Well, I know she's a Muay Thai fighter. I know she's a professional Muay Thai champ. I'm expecting her clinching. I'm expecting her knees, her kicks. I'm expecting a tough fight, so I've been preparing for it. I'm ready for it, and it's going to be a good fight.
What is your perfect fight come next weekend? What are you looking for? Because, I mean, me personally, I'm hoping you make an absolutely massive statement to the likes of Sean Shelby, where someone gets that phone call, and like yourself, and they're like, yeah, we need you on The Ultimate Fighter. You got to come on here. So what kind of statement, or what is your perfect fight, if you could put one together?
I'm not sure. Like, everything I plan in my head is all going to change once I get in there. You know, I have to see how she moves, see her strengths, see her abilities, and I'm just looking to dominate, honestly. I'm just looking to dominate, looking to take her kicks and take it to the ground and just dominate.
And, of course,
That's what I want to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, for people that have never seen you compete before, never seen you step into the cage, never seen you fight, how would you describe your style?
I have an all-around style. I'm not specific with anything. I mean, I work on my jiu-jitsu. I've come from my wrestling background. So I'm kind of more of a ground fighter, but I'm an all-round fighter. I can stand up if I need to. I can take it to the ground if I need to. So.
Well, we want to wish you the best of luck. I want to thank you very much for taking the time here, and we'll all be paying attention next week. RFA 12, you're taking on Justin Kish. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
There you have it, Randa Marcus Thomas. Make sure you follow her online at Randa MMA, and make sure you follow Ragin' Cajun Johnson. I am Ragin' on Twitter as well. Thank you very much to Kevin Ioli. You can follow him online as well at Kevin I. And of course, the clips from Dana White and George St. Pierre. Thank you very much for listening. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.